when we're younger, when I just get to this point in life, when I just achieve that in life, when I just have this in life, it'll be so much better. You're God. You're supposed to be all powerful. You're supposed to be able to handle anything. I've read in here somewhere, my grandma told me that you're love. And that moment in history, in that land with that king. From the moment we can process thoughts, we began to chase something. You've chased it, I've chased it, and it doesn't stop as we grow older. We begin to chase answers. In so many ways in life, it is a pursuit of answers. So when it's a little toddler, it's, can I have that? A sibling is playing with a toy, or they're in the basket in the grocery store and they see something on the shelf and they point to it, can I have that? As they grow older and move into elementary school, we chase a different kind of answer. 2 + 2 =, and we know that answer. And it seems simple, but it's more complicated than a toddler. And then as we move into middle school and high school, we chase different answers because we always have these questions. Do you like me? Will you go to this place with me? And then as we move into college, we still are in a pursuit of answers. Can I even get into the college that I want to get into? What is my career field going to be? And as life moves forward, it tends in so many ways to get more complicated. We think when we're younger, when I just get to this point in life, when I just achieve that in life, when I just have this in life, it'll be so much better. And in many ways, it is, yet it does not grow simplified. It gets more complicated. So we chase the answer, will you be mine forever? Because we have questions. You have them and I have them, and there are some questions that you have found the answer to. There are other questions you're still waiting. Often it's the deeper questions of life that aren't answered as quickly. And there is this one question that maybe not in this exact way or maybe not out loud, you processed it inwardly, but you've thought or you've experienced the reality of this question at some point in life, most probably. It is the question, where are you, God? Where are you? You hear those words from a doctor and your thought, as you begin to process, goes to many thoughts at one time. But one of them is, if you're a Christ follower, God, where are you? Are you in this? Even if you're not a Christ follower, even if you're not sure what you believe yet about God, you have a form of this question. God, if you are real, if you're out there, where are you in this? Where are you, God? But I read this week, and on the surface it might feel a little bit hopeful, but I want to dig a little bit deeper today. I read this week, and I think we can take hope as followers of Christ in it. When you're down to nothing, God is up to something. There are some times you can't see the evidence of what God is doing. I remember when our kids were little, often they would wake up in the middle of the night, and they would be afraid. And they would come in, and they'd say, Dad, I'm afraid. And I would go upstairs and go with them to their room. And inevitably, we would talk through it, and I'd say, okay, now you get some rest. I'll check on you throughout the night. And I would leave. And the next morning, they would wake up, and they would come downstairs. And sometimes there would be a frustration. And they would say, Dad, why didn't you check on me? Why didn't you come back? To which I would respond, I did. I was there. You were just sleeping. See, just because you don't sense God or feel God in the moment, just because you can't see him in this particular situation does not mean he's not there. So when we're chasing the questions and we're walking through difficult circumstances in life and we have that thought, we wonder, God, where are you? We reach for hope. And hope sometimes in life when we need it the most seems to be so elusive. Do you have hope? I'm not talking about surface level hope. It's easy to be hopeful when your bank account's full and your life's good and you're with somebody that's hot. It's easy to be hopeful when that's going on in your life, but when those things aren't happening, how do you find a deeper hope? Because there is that surface level hope. For example, I hope this afternoon the Dallas Cowboys beat the junk out of the Atlanta Falcons. And every good Christian hopes that. I mean, it's just what we hope. But it's a surface level hope because the reality is if Dallas is anything, they are consistently mediocre. And they will show me what they've shown me for over two decades since they've won a Super Bowl. If they lose today, it's not going to ultimately affect my life on Monday. I will throw a tantrum for a moment, but I will get over it. I will move forward. Whether they win or lose, my marriage is not improved. My parenting does not change. My life is good. My friends are my friends. Nothing really changes. I'm not talking about the kind of surface level hope that comes and goes so quickly and doesn't really impact or benefit our lives. I'm talking about a unique kind of hope. The kind of hope you can find even in the darkest moments. Did you ever see that movie years ago? Students, you won't know what we're talking about, but years ago, Hope Floats. Did you ever see that? I never saw it. I wouldn't watch it. Angie watched it. I heard about it. But the reality is, I don't think, listen, hope doesn't float. Hope is an anchor. And an anchor's job is to go to the bottom as far down as it can get, to hold on as tight as it can while you go through hell. That's what an anchor does. And there is a kind of hope that the Bible describes and talks about that can be an anchor in your life and mine, that no matter what you're going through, no matter how hard the wind blows or how high the waves are, no matter what you're walking through, even in your most painful moment, your darkest days, there's a hope that goes down deep. To find it, I want to go this morning back to the Old Testament. If you're new to church, the Bible is divided into two primary sections, the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Old Testament is before the birth of Christ. The New Testament is after the birth of Christ. And way back in the Old Testament, there is this obscure prophet. His name is Habakkuk. He's one of the minor prophets. He never made it to the major leagues. He's a minor prophet. And Habakkuk, his role as a prophet was different than most prophets. See, a prophet is somebody that would come and talk to the people on behalf of God. God would give the prophet a message for the people, and he would communicate that message. He talked to people on behalf of God. But Habakkuk was different. Habakkuk talked to God on behalf of the people because of what they were walking through. Because it was such a difficult time and they were living in such dark days, Habakkuk took the concerns, the grievances, the questions, the pain of the people, and he actually communicates it with God. Now, what's fascinating about this to me is he was asking, and they were asking, the same question 2,600 years ago that you and I ask today. It's the question of humanity. It's the question we struggle with. Habakkuk's basic question is, why doesn't God seem fair? Have you ever wondered that? God, to be God, there's this job description that I have in my mind, and there's sort of a personality that I assume you must have. To be God, there's some ideas about who you must be and what you must do to, in fact, be God. Have you ever seen something happening maybe in your own life? Maybe in a family member or a friend? Maybe you're just observing. Has there ever been something happening that you're aware of that you thought, if I were God, I would do that differently? Maybe you're driving down I-4. If I were God, he would die. Today. It'd be quick and painless and we'd help him meet Jesus, but today. I mean, there are things that unfold. I mean, isn't it true? You turn on the news, you look at the internet, you read articles, and you look at what's happening, not just in your own life, but in the world, on the globe. Aren't there moments when you think, come on, God, you can do better than that? You're God. You're supposed to be all powerful. You're supposed to be able to handle anything. I've read in here somewhere, my grandma told me that you're love, but this doesn't look like love. Why doesn't God seem fair? Wouldn't it be to his benefit to always be fair? Wouldn't it help us maybe believe more? And yet, he doesn't seem fair. So Habakkuk is dealing with this in a very similar way that we do, different circumstances, but he's wrestling with this. And so he comes to God on behalf of all the people. And we read about it in Habakkuk chapter 1. It's a short book. We call it a book. It's really an ancient document. It's just three chapters long. The first chapter, verse 2, Habakkuk says, "How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen?" Have you ever thought that? God, I've prayed about this before. I've prayed so many times, I don't know what else to pray. God, how long do I have to keep walking through this? How long does this have to continually be like this? How long will you let it stay like this? God, why over and over and over again I pray, and I don't even know what to pray, but you know the default position in my life, the desire of what I feel like you should do, what I feel like should happen, and yet you seem silent. Why don't you listen to me? And you can get to the place where God is so quiet, you begin to think it's you. He has favorites, and you're just not one of them. He seems to help other people, but there are those other things that it's not just you. It's the condition of us. This is us, the globe we live on. When I was a kid, the things I worried about were nothing like what my grandkids have to worry about today. Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? God, it seems like you're doing nothing about this. Why do you make me look at injustice? It's bad enough what I'm having to walk through. It's hard enough what I'm having to deal with. But then what I see in front of my face, what's happening in the world, what's taking place in the lives of people I love, why do you let that happen? I'm going through hell, and then I have to look at more of it? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? You're God. You could do something about this. And when we're in that place, we're grasping and struggling. That place where God seems so unfair. When God seems as unfair as life seems. Unfair. We're told we have a couple of options. One option is to run from God, to just say, forget it, it doesn't work, I've tried it. You walk through something so painful, so disappointing, such a level of betrayal that you decided this whole faith thing doesn't work. What's the point? I'm wasting my time. I'm done. It's one option. Another option is to just dive into delusion, to live sort of a fantasy where no matter how bad it is, you smile and you say, bless God, and you pretend everything's okay, and maybe one day you'll wake up and everything is okay, and you just sort of begin to live this fake life, the kind of life you wish you could feel like that, but you don't, but you're going to fake it. You become one of those weird religious people. We think those are the two options, but there's a third. There's a third option, and it's what Habakkuk does. The name Habakkuk literally means to embrace or to wrestle. To embrace or to wrestle. The third option is to embrace your faith and embrace God while you wrestle with what's happening in life. To continue to hold on to God and embrace him, even when it's a struggle to believe or to trust because of what you're wrestling with in life. And sometimes you wrestle just to be able to embrace. And then you have some, on your darkest day, well-meaning, highly religious person feel compelled to impart their deep wisdom on you. And so they come to you when you're hurting beyond what you can describe, and they say, you just need to let go and let God. When you say that to me when I'm struggling, my response is going to be the same every time. I will punch you in the throat. And Jesus is okay with it, I think. Have you ever noticed sometimes the hardest moments in life are often more difficult because of well-meaning, overly spiritual people? Have you ever experienced that? Somebody who has a quick answer for everything, somebody who always sees a certain angle that is just not reality. The best thing that you can do for someone that is hurting is not to be profound. Often it's to shut up because you can't understand what they're walking through. I know this. If you're new to C3, one of the things you may not know is my bride has a brain tumor. It's not cancerous, but the position of it, it's pressing on her brainstem and creates a lot of health issues and a lot of pain at times, and she wrestles with that. And I remember the first Sunday that I announced when we just found out about it and I asked for prayer, someone that I, no doubt is well-meaning and Jesus loves them and it's all good. They came up to her and they said, you know what your problem is? You just need to have more faith. They're not here anymore. I don't mean on planet Earth. I don't mean that. I just mean like at C3. Because there are some people that faith has to be perfect, and God to be God has to always do what we want him to do. God is just there to do our bidding. He's the genie in the bottle, and we rub it, and we ask three wishes, and he is supposed to perform. And if faith doesn't work out exactly the way it should, then life goes out of whack. So they just have to believe it's always your fault, not God's fault. But often we can so sanitize our faith that we sterilize our hope. We can function in such a way that faith is only faith when it's pretty, but the reality is faith often gets very, very dirty and very, very messy. And if you're not willing to accept the reality of that, then hope will be impotent in your life. See, real faith is not the kind of faith that you can only have when everything works out the way it was supposed to. I'm pretty sure in the book it says that Jesus died on a cross, and I'm pretty sure when he was on the cross, even Jesus, the Son of God, said, why? See, authentic faith is able to embrace and wrestle at the same time. To have questions that are not answered. To have things that don't always go my way. To pray prayers, and it's not that God doesn't answer the prayer. He does the opposite. And I'm able to still embrace while I wrestle with that. If you think back in school, go all the way back to elementary school. For some of you, you were in class with Noah, and it was on the ark. And if you were to be asked, hey, who was your favorite teacher? If you're a thinking person, you might answer by saying that depends on what you mean by favorite. Are you asking me what teacher did I have the most fun in their class, or are you asking me what teacher did I learn the most from? Because often they're very different. The seasons of our lives that are the most fun aren't always the most fruitful. The seasons we get the most out of often aren't the ones we would choose to go through. God has no problem. God seems to be very okay with life being hard sometimes. Habakkuk, why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed and justice never prevails. Have you ever thought that? Things that should be seem like they never are, and things that shouldn't be seem like they always are. Habakkuk has these problems with God, and they're not uncommon to many of the problems that we have with God. He just has three primary problems, and I think if you've been alive any time at all, you can identify with his three problems with God, because he was a mouthpiece for the people. They all had these same three problems with God. The first one is, God, you don't really seem to care. Have you ever felt that? God, what you're allowing me to walk through, what I'm having to go, it just seems like you don't care. The second one is you aren't doing much when you could. If you're God, the way I was taught you're God, or if you're God, the way I would think a God would function, it seems like you could do a whole lot more than what you're doing. And the third one, what you are doing doesn't seem fair. Sometimes you're doing the exact opposite of what I would do if I were God. Sometimes you're allowing the exact opposite of what I would allow if I were God. It just doesn't seem fair. So Habakkuk lays all these problems out to God. He's speaking to God on behalf of the people, and then there's God's response. God is going to respond. What is God going to say to that? Verse 5, look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I am going to do something. Finally, the thing I've been praying for, the thing I've been struggling with, what I've been waiting on, finally. Okay, maybe God, he's finally heard me. He's going to do something. God is about to show up. What I've been waiting on, what I've been hoping would happen, it's about to happen. I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. So Habakkuk's thinking God is saying, just wait, I'm not finished. I'm not finished. I'm about to show up. It's about to happen. And then God says what he's going to do. In verse 6, I am raising up the Babylonians, their enemy. Things just went from bad to worse. You've been waiting, you've been praying, you've been struggling, you've been hoping, and now God's gonna do something, and it just went from bad to worse. I'm raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are thieves, in fact. They are a feared and dreaded people. They all come intent on violence. Prayers answered. And so Habakkuk begins to do what Habakkuk does. He wrestles. But he doesn't stop embracing. A Christ follower can both wrestle with honest questions while embracing faith. They can live at the same address, questions and faith. Your faith can be big enough that the questions don't kick it out, that they can reside in the same place. So Habakkuk begins to wrestle. Remember, the name means wrestle and embrace. As he's embracing, he says in response to God's response, Lord, are you not from everlasting? Embracing. My God, my Holy One, you will never die. Embracing. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment? Wrestling. You, my rock, embracing. Have ordained them to punish? Wrestling. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil? Embracing. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing? Embracing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Wrestling. Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? Wrestling. He's embracing, and he won't let go. But he's clearly wrestling and not living in a delusional state where he ignores reality. He senses the weight and the pain and the struggle in its full measure. So he's wrestling and he's embracing. So when you're wrestling and you're embracing, or you're wrestling to just continue to try to embrace, how do you experience hope? How do you find that deep anchor? Not the surface stuff that is fragile and it comes and it goes and it swings like moods, but how do you find the anchor that's going to go to the bottom of the issue, to the heart of the matter, that's going to be planted so deep that it provides a foundation of hope in your life? How do you experience that? How do I experience that? It's only found in the darkest days. It shows up, if you're looking for it, in your worst seasons. See, we think when God says he's going to do something in our lives, it's always going to be easy. Because we like easy. We don't want to marry easy, but we like easy. We want what we want. We want it now. We want life to be, I want the easy job, the easy raise. I don't want to have to work too hard. I want it to be easy to get that house. I want it to be easy to have that car. I want it to be easy. Listen, wouldn't it be the greatest blessing from God if parenting was just easy? Preach. But God likes to do things the hard way. God doesn't mind. He's not afraid of hard. And so when you study the pages of Scripture and you look at the activity of God, something that can be lost if we don't pay careful attention is that God often works in and through the hard things. Joseph hears from Mary that she's going to have a baby, and he knows they've never had sex, and she says that God's the daddy. I mean, imagine being Joseph. There had to be a different way for God to do that. Really, I'm supposed to believe this. Like, the hardest thing you want me to believe, I'm supposed to believe that. But, and by the way, ladies, that excuse has been used. Mary claimed it. It can't be used again. Think about Mary. God doesn't seem to be very much into her comfort only for the sake of comfort, because in that culture, she has to walk down the street with everyone knowing she's pregnant but not married. And you think there are looks perhaps today. How do you think she dealt with it in that culture? And if you were God and you were going to send your son to earth, do you send him in that culture? Knowing the level of judgment and the harshness of the religious people, do you send him through an unwed mother? And if you are sending the Son of God to earth, don't you at least make reservations at the hospital? There's no room for them even in a hotel, and so he's born in a barn in a cow trough, because God doesn't seem to wrestle with life being hard. It's been his pattern. Before this, he told Moses, remember, to go to Pharaoh, because the children of Israel had been enslaved for years. And he says, I want you to go to Pharaoh, and I want you to tell Pharaoh, let my people go. And when you say that to Pharaoh, Moses, I just need you to know, he's going to say no. Why would God ask you to do something that he knows is going to fail? God doesn't seem to avoid hard. In fact, God seems to set up scenarios over and over again throughout history and over again in your life and mine that are, in fact, very, very hard. Maybe it's because if Moses had gone in and said, Pharaoh, let my people go, and Pharaoh had done it, Moses would have had a moment of thinking how incredible he was. I know I stutter, but that was a good speech. Pharaoh just let him go. Look what I did. Perhaps it has to be hard to the point that we feel such a level of weakness that we can be reminded that in our weakness, he is strong. Perhaps it has to be hard so that we can know that it's God's the one that's actually doing it. God doesn't mind hard. It was a little shepherd boy, David, with a slingshot that kills Goliath. I mean, there had to be an easier way to pull that off, but a slingshot and a little stone, the hardest way possible and the most difficult way, and the challenge, the overwhelming challenge that had to be in front of them. God doesn't mind hard. It was not quite so hard when Gideon had 32,000 men in his army, and God said, that's too many. Take it down to 300 men only and then attack. There would have been an easier way to do it, but God said, I don't mind hard. When Jesus is born, he's born into a culture that is very dark, highly religious, but very dark. And King Herod, in that culture, the king is wanting to kill all the boys that are born. And you don't like our president. In that culture, at that time, with a king that has absolutely lost his dang mind. We don't know what color his hair was. It doesn't matter. He lost his mind. And that moment in history, in that land with that king, is where Jesus will be born. He'll be born at a time where his family has to escape to Egypt because of that king. He can't just relax and rest in comfort and grow up in a normal childhood in the area where he was born. He has to escape to a different country because God doesn't seem to mind hard. Because God understands that it's in those hard moments, the hardest of moments, that our greatest wrestling can often be just to continue to embrace. But there's something else that God knows about hard. I don't know if you've ever gotten your kids a bouncy ball. But bouncy balls are created to bounce. It's what they do. It is the DNA of a bouncy ball. It's made to bounce, and you drop it and it bounces. The only time a bouncy ball will not bounce is if you drop it on a soft surface. What helps the bouncy ball bounce is that the bouncy ball has to land on a hard surface. The hard surface is, in fact, what helps the ball bounce back up and go higher than it was before. And what's interesting to me is the harder the ball comes down and the faster the pace of going down, the higher the ball will bounce when it hits the ground. So it could be that what God is doing in your life and mine is trying to remind us in those seasons, it's not hard because you're being punished. It's hard because you're being prepared. As a follower of Christ, you always have the ability to bounce back. It is in your DNA. If you're a Christ follower, if you're a child of the King, the same spirit that raised Jesus from the dead lives inside you. That's why he only had to borrow a tomb. He was bouncing back. So if you begin to look at what you're going through, part of what may continue to help you embrace while you wrestle is to understand it's hard because it's going to create something in your life, which is a deeper dependency on who God is in your life, a greater understanding of how with him anything is possible. A reality that, yes, I am weak, but he is infinitely strong and he lives inside me. It's just a bounce back. We think for me to be hopeful, I have to know it's going to work out. For me to be hopeful, I have to know the results. For me to be hopeful, I have to know the plan. Pastor, you don't understand. If you could see my marriage, if you looked at my finances, if you worked where I worked, if you lived next door to who I live next door to, if you were facing the same health reports that I am, I just need to know the plan. Listen. Hope doesn't have to know how when you know who. Because who has every day of your future planned. He might not have shared it with you. He doesn't have a problem hiding certain things from us because I don't think in reality we could handle it all if we knew it all. Because that teacher that I really didn't prefer, I actually learned the most from. I would not have picked her as my teacher, but I learned the most from her. And God knows that we're wired like that. And so it's when we go through these hard moments that God says, I know. Don't allow it to cause you to think that he has forgotten you. He's just setting up your bounce back. And here's the reality. If you walk away from God or give up in chapter one, you'll never experience the rest of the story. Habakkuk chapter 1 is brutal, all caps, bold, underlined, highlighted. Brutal. But if you read chapter 1 and walk away, you never get to chapter 3. See, I think God would much prefer you to yell at him than run from him. He's big enough to handle all the things you're frustrated about. In fact, he invites you to let him know that. And all you see is the pace that you seem to be moving in a direction that you would not have chosen. And all you fear is how hard the impact is going to be. And it's captured you so much, you can't see what's on the other side of it. God's going to use it in your life. And on the other side of impact, he's going to elevate who you are and your influence in the lives of other people. See, the people whose words weigh the most, when I'm in struggle, when I'm going through crisis, when I'm dealing with pain, it is the people who have hit very, very hard things in life. When they walk in the room and they tell me it's going to be okay, I tend to believe it a little bit more. People who have pillow fluffy lives, their words don't mean anything to me. People who've been through hard things, and although they wrestle, they continue to embrace Those people encourage my faith, and God uses it to grow my faith. So the very thing that you think is going to be the thing that ruins you, the very thing that you think is the thing that you just can't, you don't know how you're going to do it another moment, you can't take one more thing, is the very thing that God is going to use to give you a platform in the lives of other people to bring encouragement and hope to them. It's just a matter of time. Don't give up in chapter one. Don't run, and don't live some delusional fantasy that life's not real and pain doesn't hurt. Wrestle and embrace. Embrace and wrestle. Continue and let God finish what he has started and allowed in your life. Would you pray with me this morning? Father, you know, because you wrote it before any of us were ever born, that life can be so very difficult. You understand that at a deeper level than we could even imagine. So I pray for those in this room this morning that need hope. I pray for those that are struggling. I pray for those that don't know how they could take one more thing. And I pray that as we go through this day and throughout this week, we would remember these words inspired by you, but written through a prophet that we call minor, but could have a major impact in our lives. God, help us as we navigate this week, as we wrestle to continue to embrace. With heads bowed and eyes closed, maybe you're here this morning, and you don't know God like that. You know about God and you've prayed prayers to God and it always seems like he's so distant and you just feel completely disconnected from God. But this morning, did you know you could begin a deeply personal, intimate relationship with God? If you've never committed your life to Christ, I'd love to lead you in a very simple prayer. Heads are bowed, eyes are closed. And hey, listen, today is your day. I can't think of one good reason to avoid committing my life to Christ. And so I want to encourage you to take this step of faith. You can pray this prayer out loud, or you can pray it in the quietness of your heart. The Bible says that Jesus knows even our thoughts. So if you'd like to commit your life to Christ today, just pray this prayer. Dear God, I know that I need you. Jesus, please come into my life. Please forgive me of my sin, the things in my life that are not pleasing to you. As best I know how, today I commit my life to you. In Christ's name,